Hey, Petty fans, welcome to episode 9 of the Richard Petty Motorsports podcast presented by Petty's Garage.
Petty's-garage.com.
That's right. Episode 9.
Episode 9, and we have got a lot of you guys are going to recognize this last name.
Definitely. Jarrett Andretti joins us on the show today. He was here via Zoom from Indianapolis, and while we'd love to have him in person, our schedules didn't quite line up, and we wanted to make sure we got him on, so joined us for a great conversation over Zoom. Got to know Jarrett well. Talked a lot about his dad's driving days here on the 43 car. I'm sure you guys will all know John, you know, Mario, the whole Andretti family, man. I mean, just racing history.
Yeah. And a lot of that history shows through in this podcast. And if you guys are enjoying this podcast, please, you can watch it on YouTube. You can listen to it on all the streaming platforms. You got Apple Podcasts, Spotify. What else do you
Anchor,
upload it to?
Yep. So just go, go to your favorite streaming service, type in the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast. And if you don't see us pop up, send us a note and let us know, and we'll get it in there. But
share it with your friends and family if you're enjoying it. We want to really keep this thing rolling.
Definitely. Something else we were able to talk about with Jarrett in this interview was Check It for Andretti, the campaign that his dad John started when he was diagnosed with colon cancer, and the work that his family has done to promote getting colon screenings. The month of March is a big month for that cause, and but really year round, that's what they're devoted to. You see it on our car, hashtag Check It for Andretti across the roof strip. We worked with them on, to make sure we spread awareness for what.
Nice design on that one, Bradley.
Thank you.
Also, if you're 40 or 45 years or older, and especially if your family has a history of colon cancer, if you need a sign to go get checked out, this is your sign.
Absolutely. So we'll talk more about that. A lot of great racing stories in this interview. I think you guys are really going to enjoy hearing from Jarrett. So here he is.
So I'm Jarrett Andretti. I was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, but grew up in Mooresville, North Carolina. And I race here for Andretti Autosport in their IMSA LMP3 car.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. Really excited to have you on. Like I said, wish it could be face-to-face, but I think we've got a really good Zoom set up here. And looking forward to the conversation.
This is the first time my face has made it onto the podcast. Thank you, Jarrett.
And everybody's better off for it. Now they can put a name to a face and yeah, be a celebrity from, many years to come as you guys do this.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's exciting. For those who may, everybody's going to recognize your last name, but if you could just give us a quick, family tree rundown.
Yeah. So, if you look at the tree, there's Mario and then his twin brother Aldo, and then it kind of just goes like this. And so you have on the one side, it's Mario, and then it's his son Michael, and then Michael had Marco. And then Jeff is Mario's son, brother of Michael. And there's obviously other family members in there as well, but those are the people that have raced professionally. And then on my side, it's Aldo, John, who's my father. He has a brother, Adam, who races, and then I'm John's son. So I would just tell people, if you just want to cut straight to the chase, if you look at Marco on one side of the family, I'm basically that on the other side of the family. It kind of mirrors each other, and we're within 5 years. I think he's 5 years older than me, and I like to remind him of that as much as possible. and so that's kind of how the family tree works. But there's a lot of people that have raced no different than the Petty family, throughout the years.
Yeah, I've actually been told. I had a former boss tell me, he's like, "Do you know you look like Marco Andretti?" And I had to take a second look, and I kind of did. But it wasn't, I was like, well, that's not bad, So you can tell Marco that's not bad.
he's a good looking guy. Yeah. He was actually out with us here testing when I was talking about Sebring test, and he was out there testing with us and stuff. So that's the first time I really got to work with him professionally, and that was really, he's a great guy. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So everybody, that has listened to the Richard Petty Motorsports podcast, if they're a true fan, they're going to know your dad, obviously, in his years in the 43. right. And if they've been paying attention to our car and y'all's stuff as well in the last, year or two, they've seen the Check It for Andretti tagline on our roof strip. Talk about how that came about, the work that your dad did with that, and how you guys are continuing on that legacy.
Yeah, so when Dad got diagnosed with his colon cancer, and the beginning of it was about January of 2017, and then he had a lull there of about 2 months where people in our family knew, but nobody else really knew. And he was trying to figure out you know, he wanted to keep it private. And, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's plenty of people in that organization that know how private Dad was and like to keep things to himself, really. And he thought, you know, maybe I can make some good out of this. There was a couple of people that prodded him and said, you know, I think this could really be something that could be helpful to others. And he required a couple of people to get colonoscopies for him to kind of go public with it. One of them was Dave Calabro, who was really the person that prodded him along. Another one was Michael Andretti. So all these people went and got colonoscopies like immediately. And Dad was like, okay, now I got to go public with it. And, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how it evolved. And it was always an awareness campaign about getting people comfortable, not only talking about colonoscopies, but getting, you know, guys don't want to do that. And they don't, for one, if you have an open day, you don't want to go spend it doing that. You want to go fishing, hunting, racing, whatever you want to do. And it's about getting guys to take the time out of your day, go do that. And really it's not for you, it's for your family. You know, to make sure they're for the long haul, go there for all the Christmases and weddings and graduations and birthdays. So, so that's kind of where it started. And now it just gradually grew into people wanting to go figure out how they can help, others. And my mom heard a story, about a woman that went in to get a colonoscopy and she was high risk. And, she went in, but she wasn't of age for her insurance to pay for it. So, She went in there and they said, okay, you got to pay the deductible. And they said, well, I can't afford the deductible. So she walked out of the office. And a year later, she's in the bed with stage 4 colon cancer, you know, you know, passing away. And my mom's like, all right, we gotta help this. We got to fix this. We got to, you know, work toward getting the age lowered, but also in the meantime, getting help for people that are underinsured, not insured, can't afford the deductible, things like that. And so we just started to we filed for our, you know, our 501c3 designation, and waiting on the IRS for that. But then we have some fundraising opportunities put together and people are starting to raise money already. And we're just going to figure out the best way to make use of it. And, my mom is really spearheading this. She's taking control of it and, we have a board set up and all these people involved. And, that's just the direction we're moving in. And it's really exciting. It's really fun. And I know Dad would be excited about it, as well.
That's really cool.
Oh, and also to tie you guys back into it. So I remember about two weeks after Dad passed, I was in the office here and they said, hey, they did this really cool. And actually might've been one of you guys that designed the logo, that Check It for Andretti with Dad's helmet.
That was me.
That's badass because Thank that's you. The one we had another one and we were like, no, let's get rid of that old one. Let's use the one with the helmet and the Check It for Andretti, and that's what we use on everything now. That's on all of our emails. That's what we're using for the foundation. That's what it's on all of our race cars. So yeah, your logo that you design has become really the face and the brand of. I have to be careful because you might try to charge me for it. But you know, I mean, the face and the brand of the foundation.
I think the relationship we have with the Andretti's there, that wouldn't be an option. But thank you. That was a really cool honor for me to get to do that. I had spent a lot of time trying to, you know, it was really hard to find a good photo of that full helmet. Really wanted to have the helmet as part of it because Lance, my boss Lance, you probably know Lance, he came to me and he's like, you know, John, because probably more because of the IndyCar type background, you know, like they have one helmet that they wear, or like an F1 guys, you know, they have one helmet they wear all year round, and it may or may not match the car. And he's like, John had a very specific helmet design that he always had throughout the time that he drove for the 43. So I found as many photos as I could and tried to recreate it as best as I could, and it's been really neat to see.
It was spot on. And I mean, he's got, you look at his career, I went through, you know, his helmets during COVID, and he has them all hung up, and you can see in his career, and you can see the 43 time, and he really kind of kept that after for like the remainder of his career. It's that red, white, and blue, and it's got that piece that kind of comes up through here. And he was big on that, and he was always like, you know, he didn't like to change his helmet designs. Like, he didn't like to change them for sponsors, for anything else like that. And actually, when he changed it for Pennzoil, the president of Pennzoil corporate had to call him and say, hey, I'm going to need you to change your helmet. Dad goes, okay, yes, sir. Look at all those other helmets. They were gray. They were the Andretti gray. And then after that, he kind of moved on to the red, white, and blue stuff, and then kept that for the last 20 years of his career.
Wow. So thinking back to your dad's career, do you think there's ever been another race car driver as versatile, you know, in terms of different disciplines at the highest level that somebody has competed in?
You know, I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, there's you know, you go back and look at some of these other guys did, but I mean, he's certainly up there with those guys and trying different things. I mean, a lot of people, it was funny. I got a call from Mario during COVID, and he never realized that Dad ran Bathurst. You know, he ran the Bathurst 1000 in a car, you know, he had a deal actually to go drive a hydroplane boat as well. And it got nixed by one of his car owners. He was adding to this list, and he had, a lot of people know this as well, but he had an opportunity to go drive a funny car, after he was done with his Cup career. And, that was right around the time that everybody was kind of, you know, that was a time when like the couple people had gotten killed in them. Mm. And, I remember my mom was cutting vegetables at the kitchen table and said, "John, you're not going to do that." And she goes, and went back to cutting vegetables, and that, and he looked over me and goes, "Well, it looks like Jared, I'm not going to do that." You know, that was the only time she nixed everything his whole career. I mean, he set a record at Bonneville Salt Flats and a little Subaru and all kinds of cool stuff.
I didn't even know that one.
I was going to say, it seems like he would drive anything with wheels, but then you said the boats.
Yeah, the boats. And they used to drive motorcycles, they ride dirt bikes and stuff with Mario's. And it was funny because I was watching, we were putting these old VHS videos in after he'd gotten sick, and we were watching them in the last couple months. And there's a video of him in the Subaru, and it's like 1993, and it's a world speed record. And you expect to see him go by like, oof. Well, it's like 154 miles an hour, and it's like, bah. And so, of course, I was making fun of him. He's like, "I was wide open, and I was ducking down while I was in there. I was going wide open. That's all it had, you know?" And
Couldn't get anywhere out of it.
And it just across the salt, like, brr. And so I was giving him a hard time about that. And, you know, of course, he was telling me to shut up, you know? So he did all kinds of stuff. There was one year, and you talk about versatility, the year that I was born in December 92. So 93, he wouldn't sign a contract with anybody. So he ran 24 Hours Daytona. He ran midgets, some sprint cars, 24 Hours Daytona. He also ran the Daytona 500, I believe. And then he ran the Indianapolis 500. And he ran, and then that's when he kind of got into the Cup stuff at the end of that year. So he was like, "I don't want to sign a contract. I want to go and have fun and just do different stuff." And then he was like, "Well, now I got a kid, I got to provide for him. And mm-hmm. So now I'm gonna get serious and get to just lock in on one thing." And that was the Cup stuff. And that's where he found a home with you guys a couple of years later. And that's where he stayed.
Yeah. He's very fondly remembered by our whole fan base. You know, obviously for his Martinsville win, which I was lucky enough to be at. I was born in 94. So I would have been 4 or 5. I don't remember exactly where that race fell, but
because I was born in December 92. Yeah. And I do remember it, you know?
Yeah. I can remember how happy my dad was at the time. Cause I grew up in a Petty fan family. And that was a really, you know, we were from Virginia. Martinsville was, we always went to that race, and that was still to this day, a very, very special day for us, but, and for our whole organization too, obviously. You know, looking at, we were just talking about before we hopped on, so you guys were able to do that really cool throwback with Daniel Hemric last year, Caesars car. You know, if we were ever, if I was ever able and given the option to do a John Andretti throwback, is there one that you would say that he drove with the 43? You're like, you should do that one.
I mean, I think obviously the Martinsville win, it sticks out. I mean, but there, you know, you look back, I have a diecast kit and it's probably this big, and he drove probably, I would say, no less than 20 variations of the 43. And you remember that was the year they were doing like Pillsbury, Pop Secret, Chex,
yeah,
and all these different General Mills brands, in addition to a couple different kinds of STP brands. And then he had that all gold one that he drove, and the all silver, you know, chrome one that he drove. And so he had the Red Lobster on it at one point. So back then he was always changing it. And I remember, because I got all his uniforms, and I mean, the 43 pile is jammed. I mean, it's, you can't even fit another, you know, you got one IndyCar uniform all year, and he's got, you know, 25. I don't know what the uniform budget was back then, but it was a lot, because there was tons of them. And but I think the Martinsville win, obviously, is I like it too, because it's clean. It looks like a Petty car. It's got the blue, and it's just, I don't know, it's just, to me, it's, you know, just, I could see it right away, you mm-hmm. know, over your shoulder. And I was like, yeah, that's, you know, that's when Dad drove.
Yeah. I don't know if we ever get the chance to do it. It's not up to me, but if it was, I'd be working on it right now.
You should, if you ever get to do it, you should actually take the car how it looked when it finished with all the dents and dings and put that on the wrap. That's my dumb artistic input.
It's a great idea that also
be terrible.
Well, no, it wouldn't be terrible, but we'll look at it.
It'd be interesting.
But you'd have to get the sponsor to buy into it. You could probably even put some paint from when Ward hit him on the rear bumper. Some Caterpillar yellow and black, you know, so
yeah, we were just actually watching that because we couldn't remember who had spun him originally.
Yeah, Chris Hussey couldn't remember. We were talking to Chris Hussey about your dad, and he couldn't remember who hit him, but it turned out to be Ward Burton, somebody Chris worked with.
Yeah. Everybody's connected in this industry, you know?
Yeah.
Well, me and Jeb that's who I hung out with in the motorhome mod all the time. You know what I mean? And Ward and him never really got together, and Dad had an immense amount of respect for Ward. And there's a lot of guys in that era that I think were really, really underrated. You know, I think my dad was one of them, but other guys like the Wards, the Dave Blaney's, people like that. I mean, those guys are wheel men, and they just never got a chance to really show what they could do in some of the stuff that they were driving.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like when you look back on John's career and like we talked about the Bathurst and I mean, everything that he did, you know, he was competing really well at the highest level of so many different disciplines. It's just incredible to think about. What was it like growing up in that, you know, in the motorhome lot in that generation?
Well, it's funny because you see all the guys now. We kind of all ended up kind of in the same, you know, we all ended up racing again, you know, doing different things. Most of them ended up obviously back in the Cup stuff or Xfinity stuff. I went road racing and dirt racing instead. But, you know, it's cool to see Ryan Blaney win. He was a little bit younger than I was. It's cool to see Chase Elliott win, you know, and I obviously cheer for Jeb, and our families are good friends with Harrison and them. So it's interesting, you know, and you know that all those guys are really good people and you know their families and they're all really nice, really nice people. And so it's exciting to see them do well. And, you know, I just, you know, wish everybody the best. And I do watch all the Cup races as much as I can. And, you know, I always like to cheer for them. And then I have people that I race with in the dirt stuff a little bit here and there, like Larson and Christopher Bell and some other stuff, just kind of off and on that, you know, you get to watch as well. So that's always cool.
So where did your driving career start at then?
I started late. I was 17 and Dad bought a go-kart cause he was coming off the road and that's where he got started. So basically he started coming off the road cause he wanted to spend more time at home, bought a go-kart. Then I started racing and then we just went, you know how it goes. You go from a go-kart to, you know, a midget and then we went to super modified and pretty soon it was full bore on tour. And one time we were sitting in the car driving somewhere and he was like, you know, I wanted to come off the road and spend more time at home. And he goes, I'm more time away. I'm not getting to drive and I'm not making any money. He's like, this is the worst trade ever. You know, and he was joking and laughing because he enjoyed going to the races, but I was like, yeah, no, it's great. It's been great for me, Dad. I appreciate it. You know, and he's yeah. You know, so, you know, cause we raced together, you know, all the way, even into 2019, he was going to sprint car races and sports car races. And he passed in January, but he was at my race at Road America in September, you know, into September. So, I mean, he was still full bore going as much as he could and doing as much as he could. I got a picture of him actually wrapping the hood of the car at Road America, you know,
cool.
Him and my mom were wrapping the hood. Wow. And it was really, it was a cool picture. So,
yeah. Did it all, not afraid to jump in and, you know, put wraps on cars or anything like that. That's pretty cool. Was he one that really gave you a lot of like advice and insight and tips along the way, or was it more of just kind of supported you however he could, but let you figure it out as you were coming up?
Yeah, he helped me as much as he could, you know, and gave me as much, but I always tell people like, you know, nobody can ever do it for you, right? You know, so, but they give you the foundation and teach you the principles and the basics of whatever they're doing. And then, you know, you have to kind of find your way. And I think he had so much knowledge to draw off of. And, you know, I used to just sit on the couch with him and sometimes we would just flip between races. Like one time we were watching Bathurst and then we were watching California and then we were watching an IndyCar race. And I'd be like, you know, I'd just sit on the couch and, you know, stuff that I know, like I'm probably never going to drive a Cup car anywhere. So I would just say, hey, is that corner wide open? He goes, yeah, it is in this package, but it wasn't in that package. And, you know, you got to do this and see what he's doing there. He's doing, you know, and I would just go to Bathurst. Hey, what about the top of the mountain? Oh, yeah, that's where I blew a tire. And go, you know, so you could lean on him for all that advice. And when you go there, you'd be like, okay, here are the top three things to do at this place. Here are the top three things not to do at this place. And now go figure out the rest. You know, cars are changed, tires are different, but you know, go, here's the basics. Now it's up to you.
Gotcha. Wow. Did you ever have like the desire to try to get in, maybe not a cup car, but maybe a truck or an Xfinity car at some point?
I like how you're doing more road racing. You know, so I like the road race. I like the short tracks, you know, so I like,
me too.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. Martinsville, Bristol, and all the road races, which now, you know, I mean, you can, it's so much more balanced, you know, especially this year with the road courses and stuff like that. So I think so. And I would, you know, I've been leaning on a couple people about maybe getting in a truck to do, like, I love Mosport and stuff like that, to go down there and to run a little bit. So we'll see. Maybe I'll show up one day and have some fun. So
heard it here first.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Don't hold me to it. It may not be for 10 years. I might have to call you guys in 10 years. And say, hey, you remember what I was talking about? Yeah, I did that.
Hey, how quickly could you get a truck built?
Yeah. You guys. Well, that weekend, people don't realize or remember that weekend, but Petty swept the whole weekend.
Yeah,
they won the truck race and they ran the cup race.
Yeah, we've got. I don't think it's the exact one, but we've got a Jimmy Hensley truck right out here. So the red floor of the museum's out the door behind us, basically. Did you spend much time in this building as a kid?
I didn't spend a ton of time. I heard a lot. Dad was up there once a week, and I would go up there with him occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But he would always go up on, like, Wednesdays, so it's a matter of if I was in school or not, you know, if I had a teacher work day or whatever it may be. But I just remember I remember spending – I do remember Adam quite a bit. And I know Dad and him, you know, they were pretty close. I actually wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. I've been kind of recapping Dad's career, and I wrote one on Adam because he meant a lot to, he meant a lot to Dad and the whole organization, obviously. But Adam used to always carry, he was probably 17, 18, 19, when I would get to see him. So I was real young. I was probably 6'5", 6'7", and he always had, big packs of bubble gum in his pocket. And as a kid, you know, I got limited to how much candy. Well, with Adam, there was no limit.
Right.
Here, here's all the bubble gum in my pocket. I'll go get 50 more pieces. And, you know, I'd have this, and I'd be chewing this big thing. But Mom's like, where did you go? And then Adam's walking away that way. And so I always knew I could go to, and it was always warm. And it was at, you know, they carry those big things in the truck, and he would just grab handfuls of them and give them to us. So I just, you know, there were fond memories of that. I knew he was, if I needed a piece of bubble gum, or pieces, that was my guy.
Adam was the man, yeah.
Yeah, and he couldn't get in trouble either, you know what I mean? So my mom wasn't going to get mad at him, and neither was Dad, so I knew that I kind of had that, you know, that shield.
That's such a great story. You said you've been writing about recapping your dad's career. Is that on social media? Is there like a place people could go and look into that more?
I'll have to work. It's just a newsletter that we send out to all of our people. What I was doing, because last year, you know, I'm during COVID, when I racing, I was like, you know what, this is a perfect time to just try to recap Dad's career. And I'm doing it for our sponsors and people on our newsletter, but I'm doing it mainly for my, you know, whenever I do have kids or my, you know, ancestors, I can remember, because I'm trying to remember these stories that he's told me over, because, you know, how many times you're just driving down the road to a race and he tells you a story, but you never hear it again.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to write it down. So you got it, you know, and, but I can send you some of them. I got like 25 of them so far.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Year. So,
well, yeah. For on the one hand, I'd love to learn, but I know, you know, we'd love to share it, and the fans would love to read it as well. You know, and you bring up something why we, you know, we're on episode, what is this, episode 9 of this podcast?
Yes.
So we're pretty new into it, but we've had some guys. We've had Dale Inman, you know, we had Chris Hussey, who spotted for John, and, you know, I think we've really hit a lot of stories with these guests that we've had that they hadn't told in a while or kind of forgot about, and we get the opportunity to, you know, harness it and record it, and it's there forever. And I think it's what's so, you know, fun about getting to do this and why I like it so much.
Yeah.
And so I think, like your story there with Adam and the bubblegum, and, you know, that's one that most people are not going to know about. Yeah.
People have never heard that.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. And he would do it he would hand it to us. Like, we'd be in, like, the van, and it'd be stopped, like, you know, getting out of the track or something. And he'd just put a handful of bubble gum in through the window, you know, and it was just, you know, it was like a gift from, like, God. It was just, you know, and you're riding to the, you know, to get to the airport to get out of the track. So, and, you know, Dale Inman was always super nice to me as well. Awesome. And, And he actually invited Dad when he got invited to the Hall of Fame to get inducted. Dad was one of the people that was there with him and got invited to his table. And so Dad went, and that was Dad, you know, he, that meant a lot. That meant a great deal to him, probably more than he could ever express to Dale, you know? So
that's so cool. Very cool. So what do you got going now? I see some, you know, the IMSA stuff. What is it? LMP3?
Yeah, LMP3. Yeah, some prototype stuff. So
could you educate us on that a little bit too?
Yeah. So it's a prototype, Le Mans prototype 3. They are built by, there's a couple different chassis, but the one that we have is Liger, and it's built over in France. So they're really, really cool cars. They got a Nissan V8 motor in them. They got 450 horsepower, but they got a ton of downforce. And they're a lot of fun to drive. So we just went to, we just tested at Sebring and ran there a little bit. We ran at Daytona as well. So they're a lot of fun. I've never driven something with so much downforce. You know, I've been, you know, basically in GT cars and sprint cars and stuff like that with basically no aero. And these things got a ton of downforce and a ton of fun to drive. It's like driving a big go-kart, you know, and they have this massive shark fin that attaches the cockpit to the rear wing, and they got a ton of side force. So, it's a really cool series and enjoyable to run. And it's also not, it's pretty cost effective as far as everything that you have going on. You know, when racing, it's, you got to look at what you can do to provide value for your sponsors and stuff that makes sense. And it's a really great series.
Welcome to Petty's Garage. Every one of our strut bars and coil covers are handmade right here in my hometown, Level Cross, North Carolina. Just like our old race cars, everything that comes out of here is first class. Now, you probably know my favorite color, but we still make these things in every color you can imagine. You've got the power to make your car go and show exactly how you want. Visit Petty's-Garage.com to check out all the parts, engines, and tuning we've got to offer.
Yeah, I encourage everybody, if you haven't seen one of those cars in person or heard one of those cars in person, I was up at VIR a couple weeks ago with a buddy of mine, and one of those cars showed up, and it's like a rocket ship, man. I mean, they sound amazing. One of the best sounding cars I've ever heard in my life. And it moves. Wicked.
You have to go through the S's wide open, you know, and they're pretty, you know, they come and go before you even know where you've been at, you know?
Yeah. I've only ever done the S's in iRacing, and if I try to go flat in anything, I crash. So I don't know how you do that in real life.
It's a little bit, just that turn 10 is always tough. You know, you get to the top of the hill and it's like, if you hit the curb, you're too far wide. If you don't turn in early, you know what I mean? And it's very easy to go off and then end up in the barrier to your left. And, but VAR it's a lot of people don't realize that's like a hidden gem, you know? It's a beautiful, and that's like, I love rolling in there, and it's really like kind of like an old school road course. They haven't, and that's the reason why it's a hidden gem, is you can't run cars that are too fat, you know, too gnarly there, because everything, all the runoff is down into trees, you know, and and that's not good for something that's going 200 mile an hour, you know, down the front stretch.
I went up there for the first time a couple years ago when I was here at Petty's Garage full time. We were doing an event up there, and you know, it's in Danville, and I've come through there on the way to Martinsville a million times. I didn't even know that it existed. And it's like, you know, you go down these winding back roads and you come out and there's this beautiful course. And it's like, this is amazing. So love that course. Well, we're headed to Bristol Dirt this weekend. First time the Cup cars will be back on dirt in, what, 50 years? And
Since Richard won.
And you've got a lot of dirt experience yourself. So I'm sure you're going to be tuned in. You know, are you excited to see how this goes?
I'm super excited. I think racing's all about seeing how people adapt and how quickly they can adapt to new forms of racing. And it's good to get, you know, one of the cool things is one of the ancillary things that's happened is the promotion of short track racing, because you have all these Cup guys that are going to run. Like, I saw Keselowski was running somewhere, and, you know, Kyle Busch was running a late model, and Larson's been running. You know, all these other guys are going to get dirt experience, and the more dirt races they add, the more dirt races they have to run at other places. I think that there's been a lot of benefits to the short track scene as well. But I'm really excited just to see how quickly people can adapt, and really where the track prep goes and how they end up running. And I know that it'll be a learning process, right? And eventually they'll be able to get the, I'm sure they'll get the track prep right. And if they don't, next year they'll work on it and get it better and better and better. And it's always difficult when you get dirt on top of pavement, right? Yeah. And it's harder than people think, you know, to make sure there's no potholes and make sure it's right and everything.
He said next year.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
It's got to be more than 1 year, right?
We'll see. It depends on how much stuff they tear up.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it goes really well, I wouldn't be surprised if they come right out and say, I think we'll do this again.
I tell you what, I'm so excited for this race. I was skeptical at first when I heard about it, and then we went up there to do the announcement with Tide and Food City.
Oh, yeah, we got a first look at it.
When we saw it in person, I was like, all right, Bradley, I'm sold. I'm ready.
Have you seen any of the old World Outlaw races there? Like those guys running and how fast that is and how cool. I mean, it's going to be cool. And I always like to see guys try to adapt. I mean, it doesn't matter how fast you're going. It's how good the racing is. And really, that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to just something different, you know, and it's going to be a spectacle one way or the other. And I'm going to get to be there and see it in person. So I can't wait. But yeah, I wanted to get your take on that. And I'm sure you'll be watching.
I'll be watching heat races, everything, truck races. Yeah, I can't. I'm kind of mad the Xfinity cars aren't going. I would have liked to see some of those guys done. But
especially because they have those composite bodies, and they're probably even better suited for, you know, the amount of times that we're going to tag the wall.
Yeah, yeah. It's just different when you run those things versus running like an open wheel car on, you know, round the fence. You know, the consequences are so much higher in an open wheel car. But these guys can run, you know. I remember that year at Larson was running Eldora, and he was just using the fence to stop him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was just going and then just riding the wall. And I was like, you know, it'll be interesting to see if somebody ends up finding out that they can do that or not possible, or, you know, if they do that in the last three laps and end up with, you know, a right front spindle broke right after they won the race. You know, it'll just be interesting to see the different strategies.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we definitely hope we get, if we get another chance, we'll maybe get you in a truck on dirt at some point too. We'll see. We need to go ahead and start campaigning the Jared Andretti Truck Series Tour.
The Truck Series Tour. Just do the short track races, the dirt races, and
the road courses.
The road course races. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know we've taken up a good chunk of your afternoon, and we appreciate you joining us. You know, I know March is a big month for you guys. We wanted to give you another opportunity before we sign off here to just kind of recap everything you got going on, you know, where people can go to learn about all the great causes you guys are involved in and how they can support Check It for Andretti.
Yeah, the best thing to do right now, so just follow on, you know, obviously on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that, just at Jared Andretti. You know, we're working on the website for Check It for Andretti right now, and we should have more information on that. But if you want to donate, you know, right this second, one of my sponsors, UHSM, Unite Health Share Ministry, they're a Christian-based health sharing organization, but they've got the Steer Clear of Cancer campaign that they're working on. And all the money goes to Check It for Andretti Foundation when we get our designation. So they've actually set a website up, and it's uhsm.networkforgood.com. You can donate through there if you'd like. But really, the biggest thing I can ask of people is, if you're 50 and you haven't gotten a colonoscopy, do it as soon as possible. If you're below that, if you have a family history, if you have anything, just please go get your colonoscopy. Encourage others to get your colonoscopy, because, you know, really the biggest thing is people need to, you know, you got to be your own health advocate. If dad had gotten his colonoscopy potentially 6 months, 3 months earlier, you guys be talking to him right now instead of me, you know? And so I think that it's just do it for your family. Don't do it for yourself. Go get your colonoscopy, go get screened.
Yeah. Where can we get the, I heard somebody mention something about, your dad's book.
Yeah. Octanepress.com.
Octanepress.com. Okay, cool.
Yeah, because there's pieces about Adam in there as well, and things like that. And so even like my sister, she was a camp counselor at Big Dude Junction Gang.
For years.
So my sister, and she's in medical school now at GW, but she wanted to do pediatrics. So she went there and worked with kids, you know, the blood disorder or cancer or whatever it was. And she did that in her summers between medical school. And so, but then, I mean, I got stories like dad told a story. Because he came over from the 98 and they were really good on the speedway cars there. You know, obviously they won Talladega the year before, and dad was like, hey, you got to build the exhaust like this and you need to do this. And some of the fabricators were kind of fighting him on it. And dad was like, well, if you guys just want to run like shit, just run like shit. I don't want to be a part of it, you know? And so he left, and I guess he came back a week later, and on there, it was during like December time, and hanging off was a note that said, Merry Christmas, John. And oh, wow. So I put a note there. So he said he used to go try to put him in headlocks during, like, you know, because Adam was pretty tall. You know,
yeah.
You know, he'd try to put Dad in headlocks. Because I'd wrestle him to the shop floor and make sure he knew, you know, and okay, yep, see Adam, you know. And but he just had a – they had a – he tells a story too. And I guess they were at Sharp Motor Speedway and they were doing these appearances. And Dad loved doing those appearances because Adam always made him fun. You know what yeah. I mean? He was – you know, he was 10, 15 years younger than anybody else there. And so they were doing these ride-alongs, right? And they had the Richard Petty driving experience. And it was Richard was there and Kyle, Dad, and Adam. And Kyle, Dad, and Adam were given rides. And so they had a governor on the car. You know where this story's heading. And they had a governor on the car. And he could pull it out from the dash. And so... So they're like, don't do that. You know, we know you guys know how to do this. And
right.
Don't do that because they go too fast and it hurts the motor and yada, yada, yada. Well, of course, my dad and Kyle are out there just giving rides with the governor on. And, you know, Adam gets in. The first thing, pulls the governor, has it off out the window. Holding it out the window.
Oh, my gosh.
And the king's just like, whatever, you know, he's like, you know, and you know, he could get away with that stuff. He was like, you know, I'm not going to drive with the governor on this thing. And
oh, that's awesome.
I love that. That's such a great story. Racing's supposed to be fun, right?
Yes.
You know,
I think Dad didn't talk much about Adam. I think my dad wasn't the kind of guy to talk about that stuff, but I really think it made it fun for him again.
Oh, wow.
It really a lot, you know, because he was around and he had, you know, he wanted to help Adam get going in the cup stuff. And he really wanted to be a part of all that. And he loved being around him and he loved driving the 43. He had a ton of respect for it. And, I think it made a big impact on him when it happened. And, you know, and it actually changed some of the decisions Dad made in his career because of that. You know what I mean? Because he wanted to be around Adam and be around everything for him. And so, you know, it had a tremendous effect on your guys' family
yeah.
and everybody there. And you know, it rippled out to even, you know, to Dad and some of the stuff that he did. So
definitely.
Wow.
So, not to end on a negative.
No, it's
no,
not a negative
man.
At all.
It's yeah. It's history, man, and we're both just not purveyors, not the right word, but we just enjoy racing.
Mm-hmm.
So to see how many different vehicles like you've driven, and especially like how many vehicles your dad's driven, man, I just love it. I love race car drivers. I love racing. I could talk about it all day. Yeah. I mean, and death is a part of it. And I hate to say that, but you know, you get in the race. And I've never been in driven a race car, but like you know, it's a part of it. You know, yeah. There is a possibility you could go off, and it's just a possibility. And I think, who was it? David Coulthard was on the Formula One podcast, and he told his mom was saying something about how, you know, you could wreck or whatever. And he said, I'm butchering this, but he said something like, you know, Mom, the worst crash I ever had, I thought I had it. I thought I could save it until I hit the wall. And he said, I just blacked out. And then you wake up, and he said, what's going to happen one day is I'm probably just not going to wake up. He said, but you have to remember that race car drivers probably aren't scared. They're probably thinking, I got it. And it kind of brings a different perspective.
I listened to that exact podcast. It's Beyond the Grid.
Yeah, Beyond the Grid. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I listened to that exact one, David. He goes, just know, Mom, that I thought I had it till the very end.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the same thing. And I think I was talking to – I did one of these, and it was actually a print interview, and they asked, like, what about racing? Like, you're going to go – so you're a race car driver that's going to take racing with your life. And then you're asking about you're telling people to go to colonoscopies. What, you know, sometimes he was kind of making a point. It's like, sometimes that doesn't necessarily align. And I said, okay, in motorsports, it's a calculated risk.
Yes.
I don't get in there with a seatbelt and go, okay, in an open faced helmet and go, okay, yeah, I'm just going to go out here and drive. No, I got a 5-point harness. I got a carbon tub. The thing's built to take that hit.
Yeah.
I got fireproof gear on, multiple layers of it. I got, you know, all this other things that you do that thing's supposed to sustain 180, you know, mile an hour hit. I said, you know, with a, the colonoscopy, you go and get it. I said, if you wait till you're past 50, you're just, all you did is pull the pin on the grenade and then held it in your hand. Yeah. I said, why are you going to do that? That's dumb.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm willing, it's a calculated risk to go drive. And if you do that, knew that you took every precaution you did. But if you just didn't get a colonoscopy, you didn't take every precaution you did, it's totally different. It was okay. That makes sense.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. 100%, man.
Awesome.
Couldn't have said it. I mean, you can't say it better than that. I mean, that's literally the explanation.
Yeah.
For anybody. That's how he ended the article. So I was like, okay, well, he ended the article on that. So that must mean he thinks he's going to hit with people. So I'm just going to keep saying it because apparently it makes an impact, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. 100%.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs> Yeah. It's like people with Ayrton Senna, they would say, you know, if there's a gap, you go for it, you know? And people said, you know, how many times he got in wrecks and wrecked people. And it's like, you know, but also how, you know, close to God he was, you know, because he was like a very godly person. And people are like, there's such a dichotomy, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And it's exactly
those people aren't racers, though.
Yeah, yeah. it's a different mindset to be a racer.
Yeah, for sure.
He definitely had some, Ayrton definitely had some, yeah, I agree. He also had the, you know, basically I'm going to crash somebody to make sure I win the world championship in him. Yeah. He had that ruthlessness that was just to the core, like it's winning everything was necessary. And that's what makes him Ayrton, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes Senna, you know, that's why his name's still synonymous with racing till this day.
Yeah.
And McLaren's.
Yeah. But like you said, it's a calculated risk versus one like getting your colonoscopy where you can, it's preventable.
Right.
To a degree.
Yeah. You know? You do everything you can in a motorsports car and your team takes the precautions. There's a reason they nut and bolt everything. For A, they don't want you to crash, but B, they don't want you to get hurt, you know. But it's, they do everything, so I think that makes sense. So I hope others agree.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just real quick, curious, what age should people start getting their colonoscopy? Because me and you are the same age and he's a little bit younger than us. So I'm 29. What age should we start?
I mean, it's as early as people are getting it younger and younger these days. I mean, I know people that have gotten it. I've got my first colonoscopy already 2 years ago.
Okay.
I have the family history, things like that. I mean, it is expensive if your insurance doesn't cover it. But typically, depending on who your provider is, your insurance covers it if they find polyps. But you still have to pay the deductible. Okay. But it's just one of those things. If you can get screened sooner, the better. But definitely 100% 50. And the CDC is recommending 45 now. And people are getting it sooner than that. There's actually a news anchor here in Indiana, Lindy Daxton, who was having trouble having abdominal pain. And she's got stage 3 right now. Wow. And she was 39, and she's gone through chemo and everything like that. So, I mean, it's really, you know, I think it's just getting it younger and younger. So it's always just seemed to be a little bit behind, you know, when it needs to be moved quicker down.
Yeah.
Let's
go get colonoscopies, bro.
I don't know if it's worth it.
You know what? Yeah. Honestly, it's not that bad. The prep is the only bad part. You do the prep because you have to be totally clean.
Right.
They give you stuff that, you know, you spend basically half a day. You spend half a day on the toilet is what it is. I mean, just plain and simple. But and you can't eat anything. You go get it in the morning. They give you they put you to sleep and it's the best 20 minute nap of your life. You get up and they say you're clean or you're not clean. If you're clean, you got, you know, a good bill of health for 3 to 5 years. And you go on to the next one, or if you have to go get surgery, you get surgery. But I mean, it's just about, even my dad got it and it prolonged his life. Even if he wouldn't have gotten it, he would have gone in one day and it'd been, okay, you've got 3 months, but he was able to get chemo, fight it. And that gave him, you know, 3 years from when he got diagnosed. So even if you don't get the best prognosis, you at least prolonged your life. So, you know, there's no negative to going and getting one.
Yeah.
That's a great message to share. And I'm, you know, hopeful that this platform and getting to share this message will get across to somebody that needs to go get that taken care of. And who knows?
We only have to touch one.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was all worth it.
Well, man, I'm really disappointed we weren't able to get this together in person, because it would be great to sit down with you. And we're definitely, you know, we tell all of our guests at the end You know, we really want to get you back on. So, you know, next time you're here in our area, let us know, and we'll have you either up to Level Cross or in Welcome, and you know,
we'll bring all our stuff to you if we have to.
That's true. We can do that too.
I mean, I can come to you guys. I grew up in Mooresville, so not too far from me. But maybe in like a year, I'll reach out and we'll be able to tell you. We can give you an update and see where we're all at.
Definitely, definitely.
You'll be designing Dad's the throwback scheme for the Martinsville race, or maybe the Bristol Dirt Race for next year. Maybe that'll be a good place to run it.
Yeah, I'm gonna continue campaigning because it would mean a lot to me to get to do that. Yeah. So I'm gonna keep. You know, mentioning it to the powers that be, and we'll see if we can make it happen.
Yeah, just throw me in, just say Jarrett said, and because they can be mad at me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks again so much for your time, Jarrett. It's been a great conversation, and it's great to get to know you a little bit, and I think everybody's going to really enjoy hearing from you.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate having me on.
Well, that was another great conversation. Really appreciate Jarrett Andretti joining us via Zoom from Indy. Learned a lot about him, enjoyed all the stories that he had to share about his dad, John, and hopefully you guys learned a lot about John, his racing career, and also the awareness to colon screenings and getting checking for Andretti. You know that.
Yeah, and me and you fist bumped over getting colonoscopies, so we don't have to get them together, but we did a fist bump, so we have to do colonoscopies now.
At some point, we definitely will, for sure. And really want to get Jarrett to be able to sit down with him face to face and talk more. You know, we shared a few stories offline that I think you guys would like to hear in the future. So he's another guest that we're going to keep on the list to bring back. Again, please let us know your thoughts on the pod. Leave us your feedback. Subscribe. Tell your friends. We really appreciate you spreading the word for us and for our partners at Petty's Garage. Hope you're enjoying it. 9 episodes in, Chris. I think we're rolling along pretty good.
We are. Yeah. Send in your questions to Ask RPM.
Yes.
Ask RPM. That way we can go through and get some fan questions that we can ask future guests.
Yep. Just go tweet us, hashtag Ask RPM. I'll keep an eye out for those. Hopefully bring some insight. And remember, this is available to watch in full on YouTube, listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. All you got to do is search the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast, and we should pop right up. Hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends, tell your family. Thank you so much for listening.